And you are tuned in to Thursday Night Talk here on KHSU. Tonight, Kevin Hoover is our host. We welcome your contributions. Give us a call at 826-4805, toll-free at 800-640-5911, and to our text line at 492-KHSU.
Well, good evening, and welcome to Thursday Night Talk. I'm Kevin Hoover, editor-at-large of the Mad River Union newspaper, and we have an hour to spend on some very serious history that took place last night in Arcata, and some of the history makers are here with us in the room. And that would be, of course, the decision to take down, relocate, and do something with the statue of William McKinley, and secondarily, the plaque that designates the Jacoby Building as a historic landmark. We have Mayor Sophia Pereira. Welcome, Sophia.
Hi.
We have Vice Mayor Brett Watson.
Hello.
We also have two of the principal advocates for vastly different positions. Fire Phoenix, who has been protesting the statue for quite some time now, many weeks. And we also have Owen Moore, who was the sole McKinley statue advocate last night at the meeting. But before we get to that, we have something else that's also very important, perhaps of a more subtle nature, but it's very important for our community. We have Amy Matheson and Aaron Youngblood Smith, and they are the people who thought up this new thing you're going to be seeing around town. It's called We Are Your Community. Welcome to Thursday Night Talk.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here. So We Are Your Community is it's an initiative that they developed to try and familiarize people downtown, the business community, with the students. You know, Arcata is a liberal community, and sometimes it's a little self-satisfied and a little comfortable with itself about its inclusivity, which may not be all it's cracked up to be if you talk to actual students of color. And there's a little bit of isolation, maybe more than a little bit. So We Are Your Community. I'm not going to explain it. I'm going to ask them to explain it. What exactly are you guys doing with We Are Your Community?
So We Are Your Community is...
This is Aaron Youngblood Smith.
Thank you. We Are Your Community is a project that Amy and I are working on as a part of our graduate work that we're doing here at HSU. And it's really a media campaign that seeks to build relationships between the business and Arcata community members and the students of color on HSU's campus. Through our relationships with students, we just found that they don't really feel like they're wanted or feel comfortable in Arcata and the businesses. And so, you know, we feel like we should do something to encourage them and community members to come together and just enjoy what this community has to offer.
And how are you doing that?
So it's a media campaign. This is Amy. And what we're doing is we are interviewing students of color. We have four students, and we're asking them to share their experiences in our community, both positive and negative. And from those stories, we are designing posters with their images on the posters and just short excerpts of their stories. And then from that, we have our Facebook page, and on the Facebook page, we have short videos of our interviews with the students where community members can get to know the students more and hopefully just learn more about them and their experiences here.
I should have mentioned that we, of course, thrive on your phone calls. Feel free to call in with questions to 826-4805 or 1-800-640-5911. You can even text your question to 492-KHSU. That's probably 707-492-KHSU. That's right. Okay. So 826-4805 if you just use a good old-fashioned phone. And you're doing this by, you know, visual is all very important. So we have these little posters that show the student, and it says, we are your community. And it gives some basic details about the students. It puts a face on them, and it tells you that they're actual human beings. So, and then this will be followed up more in depth with interviews.
Right. We wanted to highlight on the posters that, you know, these students are just like you and I. They enjoy the same things about this community that anyone would, but they do walk around differently, and that we want people to acknowledge those experiences and just like take their truths as what they are and realize that the way that I walk around is not the way that you walk around, and it's okay, but we just want everyone to feel safe and feel wanted. And so these students graciously, you know, allowed us to hear their details about the way that they engage with the community, and we really appreciate them for doing that. And so me and Amy just want this to be a success, and we want people to really engage, and hopefully this will be that one extra step to help what's the efforts that are already going on in the community.
You know, I cling to the belief that we have so much more in common than we have difference.
Yeah.
And yet our social media these days just seems to dwell on our differences, and we take a difference, but maybe a significant difference, but it's not the whole story. And we just build a world of conflict around these differences when we should, and a lot of that's based on assumptions too. So this seems to be geared towards breaking down assumptions about people.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, how this project started was Aaron and I are going through the social work master's program together, and we developed a very close relationship. And this was the first time that I've had a close relationship with a person of color, and this is the first time that Aaron's had a close relationship with a white person. And, you know, it's only through those close conversations that we've had that we've gained a deeper understanding of our experiences and the way that we see the world. And we have so much in common. And, I mean, we're like sisters. And it's, I mean, it's amazing. And I think that's what we're trying to hope to move forward within our community, is that we do have more in common. And yet I do realize, and I have heard from Erin, that she does move through this community in a different way than I do based on the color of her skin. And that breaks my heart. And I love this community. And I don't accept that that is the way that it has to be, or that that is the way that we should accept the way that it has to be. So that's what our project is about, is not accepting that, moving forward, building relationship, and
leaving our mark in any way we can.
Yeah, absolutely.
These will be rolling out, March 2nd?
Mm-hmm.
So we'll start to see these posters in the windows. And so will we meet these people, the students? Are we going to meet them, or are we just going to consume their stories?
Well, three of them are still in the community, so hopefully they'll be going to the businesses, and community members might say, oh, hey, I know you, I see your face around, but I don't know. I mean, they're more than welcome to.
If this goes over well, I mean, will we maybe do more or continue the program?
Well, hopefully we're going to be finishing up our graduate studies this spring. And so hopefully, you know, anyone would be willing to pick up and build on it.
Right. Well, the community is composed. We do have some diversity in the community. We have the business community. We have the downtown. We have the traditionalists. And we have Valley West. We have the Humboldt State world. And so we do actually have some diversity in our community. If only those different constituents could mingle more.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Break down some barriers. 826-4805 if you have a call. Oh, we have an off-air caller.
Yes, we do. She called more towards the beginning of the hour, so I kind of wanted to let you guys get settled in. Didn't get her name, but thanks so much for calling. And she just wanted to know how other students can get involved.
So right now our Facebook page is up. It's We Are Your Community, Arcata. We Are Your Community. You can search it on Facebook, and that is a space where we encourage conversations and open dialogue for people to just get to know each other and meet up, possibly. Right now, that would be probably the best way for anyone that wants to participate in this program to reach out to us and connect to us. But if there are any students that kind of want to pick up the project, they definitely can email that or email to that Facebook page, and we'd be more than willing to talk to anyone that wants to build upon the work that we're doing.
Or they could develop their own project.
Absolutely.
And maybe approaches this in a different way.
Right.
Yeah.
I'll ask our mayor, Sophia. I imagine you're completely opposed to this. So.
Not at all.
Oh,
right.
Oh, I'm sorry. I got that back. But I actually learned about this from you at the State of the City thing at the Minor Theater the other week.
Yeah, I was hoping, Amy and Aaron weren't able to make it, but given that this was something that they're working to engage the business community in, given that so many people in our community go to our local businesses, I really saw it as an opportunity to reach, those key influencers in our community, those that have storefronts and restaurants and local businesses that can help support this effort. So I just wanted to help support the work that they're doing.
Good. Okay. Well, I hope you get buy-in. How have the businesses reacted? Are they?
I think we've had mixed response. We've had a lot of support and people just like having vocal support. I think there's maybe a little bit more reticence about actually placing a poster in their business window, just based on the fact that you know, once you have a poster in your window, then you have 10 posters in your window type thing. So we're really, you know, relying on businesses to take that step and show that, you know, this is something, we're not just promoting a concert or an event that's coming up. This is a community-wide effort. This is something that, you know, we're trying to get, you know, the majority of the community behind. So we're hoping that they'll go out of their comfort zone and, you know, their policies and procedures and actually place a poster in their window.
One, I think before the show you told me the reaction by one of the business people that you talked to was?
Yeah, I think there is a portion of our community that doesn't want to admit or maybe has not had these experiences, and so they're not able to kind of connect with the fact that students have a different, or people of color have a different experience than they do. And so that was challenging, but I think that through our conversations, we allowed some thought process to happen, and hopefully she'll reach out to us and allow us to put a poster in her.
But it was, she wasn't opposed to it necessarily, but she just didn't said, what, you mean there's a problem? That type of thing?
Right. I think she just had a hard time believing that this is really happening.
Yeah.
Which isn't, that's not an isolated, you know, reaction that we get. It's not just from one business owner. I have conversations with, you know, white individuals in this community who say the same thing. So, like, oh, I can't believe that anybody says those kinds of things or does that thing. And it's, I think there's a lack of awareness by not just a few, but a lot more than a few. And so that's what we're trying to have conversation about. These, there are issues.
It'd be so great if we could all just kind of step out of our limited personal experience and realize that we don't know what we don't know.
Right.
And that other people have, you learn this pretty quick in the newspaper business. You don't know everything. And everything you do could be enriched with the participation of others. And it just, those are things you learn. And, you know, I don't believe anything that I don't see for myself. And even then, I'm questioning it. So question your reality. Well, I guess that's we've covered that. Folks, watch for these posters in your window, in the shop windows March 2nd. Any further notes to add?
Yeah, we're just hoping that more businesses are wanting to put posters in their business window, so please contact us. Our email is weareyourcommunityarcata@gmail.com, or visit our Facebook page at We Are Your Community. And then also, we're going to have a culminating event in May, so look for that. And we hope that business members, community members, students all come together at this event and build relationship and interact and thank you.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much. Amy Matheson and Erin Youngblood-Smith, thanks for doing this, and thanks for being on Thursday Night Talk.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. We're going to have a really awkward shuffling of chairs and furniture noises and stuff while our next two guests take their seats. And we move on to, well, the historical event, which occurred last night, which was the decision to remove after, oh, man, how long has it been? 112 years, the statue of McKinley on the Arcata Plaza. So we have Mayor Sophia Pereira, Vice Mayor Brett Watson, activist Fire Phoenix, and citizen Owen Moore. Actually, we're all citizens, so. And, of course, we're interested in your phone calls, 826-4805. So, yeah, the vote was 4-1. Both of you voted for removing the statue. The plaque, we pretty much all decided, sucks. It's stupid. It's a big, dumb plaque that misinforms people in a racist way on a prominent street corner. That's got to go. So, but there was some debate about McKinley. That was, there are traditionalists who wanted to keep him, and there's folks who'd like to get rid of him. Are you comfortable with the decision that you made last night, Mayor Pereira?
Yes, I am. That doesn't mean that it was an easy decision. It was not a decision that I took lightly, and I would say that over my time on the council, my viewpoint had evolved based on the feedback I was getting in the community and taking the time to really reflect on, you know, what are people's concerns with this statue. And at the end of the day, what it came down to for me is that listening to the variety of arguments for keeping it where it is versus moving it, to me, it came down to this point of this statue is at the center of our plaza on a pedestal. And when we distill the arguments to whether or not it should still be at the center of our plaza on a pedestal versus moving it somewhere else, it felt like there were more compelling reasons, in, from my perspective, of why it shouldn't be at the center of our plaza on a pedestal. But that's not to say that that negates the arguments for keeping it where it was. It was a very difficult decision, but I feel comfortable with the decision I made based on all the feedback that we've gotten over the several months and, I mean, over the years of being in this community.
Vice Mayor Brett Watson, are you comfortable with your decision? Now, you had seemed to be going towards opposing removal, or, I mean, the way it was done. You seemed to be going, advocating for a vote of the voters, a vote of the voters, a ballot measure, in other words. Then at the last minute, you voted for it.
Yeah, no, and I mean, I still feel the same way. I still wish we had chosen to let the voters make the final decision. You know, for the last 6 months or so, I've just spent a lot of time engaging the community as much as I possibly could on the issue, and it really did seem pretty divided. And, you know, I think that's a question, you know, politicians more experienced than me or more familiar with facing is your constituents versus, you know, your gut and, you know, your heart. And so, you know, it wasn't really, I didn't feel like it was really clear what the, you know, constituents wanted. And so that's why I felt like, you know, that would have made me more comfortable. And I would have been happy to follow whatever, you know, to pursue, support whatever they wanted to do.
May I ask a question?
Oh, and more.
Yes. I'm interested that you said you felt that it wasn't clear, and yet there's not going to be a vote so that the opinion of the residents of Arcata on a symbol, which is at the center of their town, will be clear. Wouldn't that have cleared things up?
The vote?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I was a proponent of a vote. And both times when I spoke,
which interests
I was a proponent
me.
Of the vote, yeah.
But and yet you did not vote well, dissent
clear,
last night.
Yeah, it was clear to me that when, you know, we went to vote, that there were three votes for removing it. So, right. You know, at that point, one of the two, you know, my vote was not going to, it was not going to have an effect. And when I was left in that position with that, you know, that period of time to make the decision, that's just the way I decided to go.
Because when I vote for my leaders, I often wonder and consider if they have given me the opportunity to express myself.
That's what, actually, somebody came into the office today and said, I was robbed. I didn't get to have my vote.
I'd like to say something about
Fire
that.
Fire Phoenix.
The newspapers, all of them, are available every week, every day for letters to the editor, for op-ed pieces. There were several community meetings. There's city council meetings every month. There are dozens and dozens of opportunities for everybody to speak, no matter what opinion they have. So to say that anybody was robbed of their opinion is simply not factual.
This person said they were robbed of their vote.
Well, maybe so, but that doesn't take away their voice. I'm wondering why they didn't use their voice.
Well, let me challenge those of you who wanted to put it to a vote with this. Arcata wouldn't exist in its present form without outsiders. A vote would only include citizens, but we want all kinds of people to come to Arcata. Why would we want them to be uncomfortable? And why would we want them to be in the presence of something that makes them feel bad or frightens them or reminds them of a terrible historical event? I mean, would a vote really be fair if it only includes just the people who reside in the town?
So, you know, I guess I would say then why do we vote on anything based off of jurisdictions, you know, like a city or a county? I guess that's just the way that's the way I understand the system. I'm not saying it's a great system or it's a perfect system, but, I mean, that's the system I'm a part of. And I was appointed. I wasn't elected. But, you know, I just feel like that the citizens elect people to represent them. So I'm glad our decision has made a lot of people happy. A lot of people have been thanking me and, you know, told me how happy they are about it. But there's a lot of people that aren't happy about it as well. So to me, the best outcome would have been, and I, you know, told a lot of people this, that they spent their time and energy talking with the citizens of Arcata, because I felt, you know, I said this last night, a lot of people don't know about a lot of things that McKinley did. And, you know, if they had a chance to have more engagement with it and to learn more about it, then maybe, you know, I think it would be likely that the citizens would have come around on their own. And I don't know. I just think that would be a better long-term solution. It would have taken longer.
Would that have more definitive value, a vote of the people, Sophia, if the voters had decisively or come to the same conclusion that you did? Would that have been preferable? I mean, if it came out that way?
You know, I really thought a lot about the proposition of it going to the ballot. And given that with a ballot measure, advisory or otherwise, you present a question and the options are yes or no. And I think when we pose something as complex and divisive as this issue, and given that there are multiple potential solutions to the issue of the statue, of what you do with it, where does it go? Does it go, you know, to another part of the plaza? Does it go to another part of our community? When you have just a binary yes or no answer, or those are the two options that a voter can choose from, I think we miss the opportunity to really understand the spectrum of opinions. And I think to Fire's point about using our voices throughout the public process, that there are so many different mediums. I heard from so many folks. I heard from folks that supported it, that supported putting up a plaque only but not moving it. I mean, really all these different ideas. And it's through the public debate and the dialogue where we are able to really explore those ideas, where if we have a vote, no matter if it's, you know, yes or no, where it lands, I think we really lose that, especially if it were to fail. We actually don't know, is this truly because there's opposition to doing anything with the statue? Or was there actually people that may have voted no that were open to the other opportunities, but that one question and the two options kind of it keeps them away from exploring the other ways to approach the issue?
826-4805, if you'd like to call in a question, or 707-492-KHSU. I'd like, since we have two of the folks who are on the opposite side of this, I'd like each of you to give me your best, you know, elevator pitch for why Fire Phoenix, why should we get rid of the statue? Keep it brief.
Very simply, culture has changed in the last 120 years, and where this was a very sexist, racist society where all about, you know, might makes right, let's go conquer the world and take over everything, we've evolved and we've changed, and our values have changed, and that's not the culture. We're not the culture today that we were 120 years ago. So to have this symbol that represents this old, now outdated culture and value system, why would we keep it?
Boom. Challenge question. Okay. What would you say to someone who said that you're actually disrespecting the people of the time who made a decision to put that there, that we're, you know, sort of cleansing, we're imposing contemporary values on history, and we're cleansing the things that don't comport with our present values? If we do that by extension, I mean, if you go to the Vatican, they have statues of emperors and things who did very heinous things. Should they take all those statues down? Or are we, you know, I heard an art historian say, when you look at a sculpture, you're not looking at that per se. It's not limited to the representation of that person. It's an expression of the people of the time. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I think it is an expression of the people at the time. And in any country, when there is a big change, a cultural change, the old statues come down, new ones go up. That's common across the planet. Also, as far as honoring the people who put up the statue, my understanding is the man who commissioned it was 81 years old at the time. So we honored him by having the statue up for the rest of his life. We honored him by having the statue up for the entire lifetimes of all of his children. And now things have changed. So there was no dishonoring.
Okay. Oh, and more. What's your elevator pitch for retaining the statue?
Well, I'm happy to give it ex post facto, because the statue's coming down. So it's interesting to have a debate about McKinley and the statue of McKinley when the debate is closed. So I would say that. You know, a gentleman last night made a comment about the statue, that a statue is not history. History is in textbooks. A statue is a symbol. And he, I believe, was a history student here at HSU. Statues are primary sources. The pyramids are primary sources. The Colosseum is a primary source. And this statue is a primary source to people who, over 100 years ago, wanted to commemorate this man. One thing I would like to say that I have not heard yet, perhaps I've not read every article or attended every meeting, is when we talk about the culture that has changed, when we talk about values which don't represent us,
We're talking about removing a statue of a president. That might be unprecedented. Has our culture changed so much that we now reject what a majority of Americans voted for twice? I'm not sure that it has. And I do agree that McKinley is certainly an imperfect human being. I'm not going to stand here and try to paint him with an angelic brush. Every leader, every human being has good and bad features. I tried to say what I saw when I looked at the statue of McKinley last night, and I'm glad that Fire Phoenix and Madam Mayor both brought up voice, because my voice was not heard last night. I was the only citizen who spoke out in favor of retaining the statue. I thought about it. I did extensive research. I do have a background in history, and I am myself a teacher, and I have taught history. And I tried to word what I thought was a respectful, thoughtful speech of 2 minutes. I was jeered at. I was shouted at. I was disrespected. I remained in silence, respectfully, while I was being disrespected. My time ran out. The mayor wouldn't let me finish, although several other people who were speaking for the removal of the statue were allowed to continue speaking, including someone who sang a song, which was powerful and beautiful. But so I do feel that my voice has not been heard. I feel that I was not allowed to have a voice because I don't feel that the democratic process last night was representative of what our country stands for. And I certainly feel that anyone who was unable to attend a meeting because that person works in the evenings or was simply going to wait for a vote to be called has not had his or her voice heard in the only way that really matters here, which is at the ballot box. Because what we're talking about is a symbol at the center of our town, which represents our values. If our values have moved on, and if the majority of the people in this town feel that way, so be it. But they were not allowed to speak. A few council members, in my opinion, decided to brush aside the controversy. So again, we can talk about McKinley. I don't see a lot of point.
Okay, 826-4805 if you have a call. Let's address your ability to speak. I also thought that you were shut down prematurely. But when I went today and I looked at the tape, and it's online, anyone can watch it, so I did an analysis. You spoke for exactly 2 minutes. It was in three segments. You started at hour, 9 minutes and 7 seconds, and you spoke for 1 minute and 5 seconds. You were jeered down. Sophia quieted everyone down. You spoke for 43 more seconds. Jeering. Sophia quieted everyone down. You spoke for 12 more seconds. And that came out to exactly 2 minutes.
But does that include the songs other people were singing?
This is your speech, and you know, I looked at it twice. Somebody else could go look at it right now, and but I mean, it came to exactly 2 minutes, although other people were allowed to go over later. Now, I don't think anybody here is going to interrupt a tribal elder who's handicapped and is singing an ancient song. I mean, that's just not going to happen. So I understand why she went over. But other people, too, were kind of allowed to go on for quite a bit longer. What do you think about that, Sophia?
Yeah, no. I have to say, I think with any meeting where you have over 100 people in the room and it is a contentious issue, really with running a meeting, there is a science to running a meeting. There's Robert's Rules of Orders, you know, parliamentary procedure. We have the laws in place. So we have the science of running a meeting, but it's also an art. And always going to be working on my craft of running a meeting, but it's really taking things as they go and trying to make quick decisions as a situation pops up. So I understand that I'm not going to be able to have scientific precision in how I run the meeting. And I don't say that as an excuse, but merely to say that I'm always going to be working to improve how I run a meeting. I think every meeting is always a learning opportunity. And I have to say, you know, one of the things that I think is really important in the public process is civic discourse. And, I recognize that emotions were very high for various reasons in the room last night and in previous meetings. We've had lots of contentious meetings in the past for very good reasons. And so you know, I think as a community, we have to, you know, work together to be able to communicate our mutual respect for each other. And I understand that, you know, there are going to be folks that, you know, are going to, you know, maybe speak out of turn or cheer. And it's just trying to find the way to the best communicate that we have to make sure that there is space for all opinions to be heard. Everyone gets their equal time. And that as an elected official, I need to be able to hear all those different opinions. But I recognize that can definitely be an intimidating situation and just to even be disrupted like that. I believe everyone should have their equal time.
It looked to me, it seemed to me at the time, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you were trying to kind of lay down what the rules are. You're going to have 2 minutes, and Owen was the first one that where it's kind of went awry. But that example didn't stick. The later, you don't have a thing where you could just turn off mics or open a trap door. So if people keep talking, they're just going to keep talking, and you can say thank you, and they just keep talking. You know, what can you do?
I'd like to speak to the idea of people thinking that their votes were robbed. We have a representative government. We've got 5 council people, including the mayor, and they make, I won't even say dozens, I'm going to say that the council makes hundreds of decisions every year. It would be just, it would just be a crazy idea to think that every single decision would have to go to a vote of the public. And if
Wait a minute. Okay. Did anyone say every single decision has to go to a vote? I don't think anyone is purporting.
No, nobody has said that. But what I'm saying is we elect these folks to be our leaders, to make decisions, and there's more history than there was last night. Now, last night, there were roughly 150 people there, 50-some-odd speakers. All but Owen spoke in favor of removal of the statue. But again, there were a lot of other venues. I went to a community meeting at the D Street Community Center.
D Street Neighborhood Center.
I knew I was going to say that.
The old community center.
And the removal of the statue and actually several options about the statue were also posted there. And I know that overwhelmingly the people there said that they wanted the statue removed. And I think that the outcome was pretty nearly the same at most of the community meetings. So it's not just what happened last night, but it's a long history of people saying, let's get rid of it. There was also a petition with about 1,800 signatures. Those were people.
Out of 16,000 people who live in this town.
Those are not 16,000 voters. Neither were the 1,800, to be fair. But the idea is there are opportunities for people to use their voice. And if people are repeatedly using their voice to say one thing, and the other side is repeatedly not using their voice to say what they want, to cry foul at the end of the process, I don't know about that.
Here's my theory. I mean, just as with our previous guests, they were telling me that a lot of the businesses said, what, we have a racial equity problem? Why would we? You know, I think that a lot of the traditionalists who support McKinley really didn't take this seriously. We've heard over the years, there used to be a rhythm to it. You know, every 3 years or whatever, it'd bubble up. And no, we're not going to tear it down. They would bubble up again. We'll tear it. No. And I think they thought this was just another one of the periodic surges, and they didn't really take seriously. I try to tell people that, you know, this is a credible thing this time. It could happen. And lo and behold, they're so surprised it actually did happen. Owen Moore.
I'm glad that Madam Mayor brought up civic discourse. I'm far more concerned with civic discourse in connection with the meeting last night, really, than I am with the statue itself, and I would like to say why. As a teacher, as someone who has taught history, I try to foster a community of discussion and an exchange of ideas which is respectful, which is informed, in which people talk about ideas, not attack each other's identities, and in which the dignity of everyone to express his or her opinion is respected. Now, I'm familiar with Robert's Rules of Parliamentary Order. I've chaired a few much lower level meetings in my life. I understand completely that no one is going to be able to control or should be able to control a room of 150 people. But what I saw last night, from my point of view, was not about civic discourse. It was a mob of people shouting, being disrespectful, jeering, screaming, being out of order. And in my own case, I didn't feel that any council member really did anything
to ensure my right to speak respectfully, democratically, and in an informed manner. So as an educator, I didn't see any of the things that I hope my students will do in this room. And I would ask our mayor and vice mayor, as people who are elected to foster, facilitate, and protect civic discourse, do they feel that that was done last night?
I got a comment real quick.
Brett Watson, you know,
I wasn't vice mayor. I really appreciate your feedback. I think it's good feedback. I wasn't excited about, you know, the way the, you know, it's hard, like you said, it's hard to control a large group, but something I feel very strongly about is that Sophia does an outstanding job running meetings. I mean, she's one of the best chairs I've ever seen, in my opinion. So I think that it's something that I would like to talk about. I don't know how to, you know, address that. It's a huge group of people when we get those kinds of situations. But I genuinely believe that, you know, we do the best job we can.
I have 2 points to make. This is by far from the only meeting that the majority sentiment intimidated the minority. I mean, I've been through this with fluoride, with GMOs, with grow houses. I mean, Arcata, once it makes up its mind about something, you know, the minority is not necessarily treated very well. I would also push back on you, Owen, in that I don't know what more they could have done. You know, short of, like I say, you know, pulling the plug on the mic or, you know, having the cops come in and wrestle people out of the room, which I've seen done twice, unfortunately, over my years. The
I don't think anybody would have been happy with that.
Well, what else could, what would you have done had you been on the...
Well, I'm not on the city council. I'm not elected to consider how I can protect respectful civic discourse.
But practically
I
speaking,
leave that up to my elected officials.
What technique could they have employed? Can you think of anything?
I would be interested to hear what they would have to suggest about it. I believe the vice mayor just said it's something he thinks about. And I'm not suggesting that a solution is available, but I would like to ask our elected officials after the meeting last night, which to me seemed to be a shouting match in which one side shouted and created an echo chamber for itself. From my point of view, was this a concern for Madam Mayor? And is this something that she thinks about going forward?
You know, I will just say with several of the meetings that we've had, you know, over the past year where there's been increased tensions on community issues, of course, this has been something I've been thinking about of how do we make sure that everyone feels that their voice is heard. And from a practical standpoint, I think every meeting is going to be different. You know, who shows up to the meeting is going to be different. The issue that we're discussing is going to be different. So like I was saying before, you know, I have the process down in terms of knowing how that works, but making sure, you know, how we artistically approach it so that people still feel heard, you know, it's a work in progress. I can't tell you, oh, here's A, B, and C, what I can do right off the top of my head, because every meeting is different. There are times where I prepare for a meeting thinking it's going to be incredibly contentious, and it ends up not being. There's other times where it becomes a surprise. And so, you know, so I'll just say that I think with every meeting that we move forward, as me being mayor, I think it's always going to be a challenge, but I'm going to rise to the challenge. And so, but it takes the community support as well. It takes the people in the audience as well to see the value in that. So I will do everything I can to make sure to communicate. And I really did try to, I really did feel for you in that moment, even though I just, you know, we are on different sides of the issue, because I understand that what it can feel like to be a minority opinion on something. So I understand that. And I did try and communicate after you spoke, you know, what I'm hoping the values would be going forward of allowing for that civic discourse. But we'll keep working on it.
I just want to make a comment about something you said, Owen. I think maybe it's an oversimplification to say that it was a mob. There were a lot of people that had some rhetorical excesses, and maybe some of the speech was maybe a little abusive and excessive. At the same time, I heard some actual factual things that I had never heard before, and I heard some pretty compelling arguments. I agreed with some and not with others, but I just think it's a little simple to dismiss it as a mob. I've seen mobs, and they didn't have as much going for them as that group did last night. But I want to move on to a few other topics. By the way, if you have a question, it really surprises me that we're going to go through this entire show with no questions from the public. But if you do, 826-4805 or 707-492-KHSU to text it on in. We've got a statue to remove now. do you know what the next steps are in this? Now, in reading the staff report, it's going to cost not necessarily $65,000. We might get away with a negative declaration, which could cost maybe $10,000 plus $15,000 for the removal. So we could get out of this with $25,000. But fire's going to raise every penny of the cost.
That's right.
And we're going to hold this to you.
That's
right. Hold you to this.
No pressure.
Do we have our mayor and vice mayor here. Have you talked to staff about what the timetable is or what the next steps are?
You know, I haven't gotten a chance to really debrief with our staff about this. You know, given that this will have to require a general plan amendment and go through the planning commission, I think figuring out the timeline will be key, because I know the planning commission is very busy right now with some major housing development projects that are before them. So I think it's just needing to sit down and really identify, you know, how can we move this forward and not necessarily delay it, but also be mindful of all the other competing projects that we have going on, and so that we don't go off the rails with those two.
Yeah, because this is going to involve both all the paperwork and compliance issues, and then we've got to get to the physical aspect of removing a giant crane or something. And we also have to figure out what to do with it. Do we have any credible suggestions for that?
I mean, you know, staff told me I think the current plan, if we need an immediate place to put it, would be the corporation yard, you know, or some other form of city storage.
It's been mentioned to put it at Phillips House Museum, which doesn't really seem to have enough room to put it.
Yeah, I don't know. And it's the whole, you know, like when the original artist had thoughts on where to locate it, the whole scale. I don't think it really fits there,
yeah,
in my opinion. And I think that that is also a site, you know, we just dedicated a sign there, you know, overlooking it, kind of talking about the indigenous people that were there. And I believe that site is...
That site, yeah. We're talking about the slope along 7th yeah. Street that goes down to the Arcata yeah. Community Park, Health Sport, the Community yeah. Center. It's a very rich archaeological site for Native American artifacts. I seriously doubt that they want McKinley looming yeah. over that, too. It's like, is that really an improvement? I hope that you don't melt it down, as has been advocated. I'm not
I don't think it's going to be destroyed.
I hate it when, you know, the guys in Metallica destroy guitars, or even, you know, Pete Townsend. I really hate it when they yeah. wreck musical instruments. It is a piece of art. I mean,
and it is also the representation of the man who these people, these other Americans, twice selected to lead this country. And whatever the destiny is, okay. But I think it would behoove people, based on a lot of the language I've heard used, to have a bit more respect for the institutions of this country, regardless of who may be occupying the most important role in our country right now.
It's kind of tough with the present one.
Yeah. It is. But, you know, I remember at school as a boy, I used to think it was a bit ridiculous that if the flag touched the ground, it had to be burned. But this is a tradition which is important for tens, maybe hundreds of millions of people. And if we say culture's moved on, fine. But I don't think we should disrespect the many people for whom this is an important symbol, for whom the presidency does mean something, for whom the will of all of the other citizens should be respected.
Maybe this will be a lesson to all the people that sat this thing out, that, you know, history belongs to people who show up. You know, 90% of it is just showing up, as they say. So this gives us some opportunities, too, to redefine our town square. And maybe, finally, we'll find out if those marble steps are still there. If you didn't know, in the early 1990s, the plaza was reconfigured. I remember it well. There was an orange mesh fence around it for a couple of months, and then they moved where the benches were. And one of the things they did, which has been very controversial, is they buried these marble steps that everyone fondly remembers, and I could never use because they were always covered with spit. But a lot of people, and there's been discussion that maybe they were destroyed during the remodeling. So maybe now we can excavate all that soil and find out if we still have steps.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Something to look forward
what
to.
Do you, our leaders, do you have any suggestions for what might replace McKinley out there, if anything?
I'll just say right now, I think to recognize what a big decision this was for our community.
The community didn't make it because they didn't vote.
We have a representative government. They did vote.
So, what you were saying?
Yeah. So, given that this was a big decision that affects our community, and people have been engaged on this issue for decades, I think it's appropriate to leave it be for some time and to have that space be open, given that it's never been open before. And so, I to me, from my perspective, it feels premature to make a decision on what happens with that space. I think we should experience it without the statue. And then I think if it, if the community dialogue starts to go that way, you know, we can explore it. But I think it's appropriate to leave it as is.
So without the pedestal, or maybe leave the planter, or take the planter out and
I mean, I guess I was originally envisioning it that it would just be a flat open space, but I
know, we could put a bicycle wheel hub that, no, never mind.
like a roundabout? Yeah. Like on 10th and I?
A flat open space would promote a lot of civic discourse, which I think we all agree is a good thing.
A Millard Fillmore statue. I mean, this is like, do you have any ideas?
I agree with the mayor. I think that the, you know, especially immediately to leave it as an open space. Yeah, I mean, I think that we have talked about forming a, for, you know, the rest of the plaza, forming a committee to talk about, you know, changes on the plaza that might benefit everybody. So maybe that would be an appropriate place to get ideas for it.
Do you guys have any ideas, Owen or Fire?
I just want to jump back for a moment to the fundraising. I am absolutely going to do the fundraising. I've been the executive director of three nonprofits. I've raised $2.5 million. I know how to raise money. And I did speak with the mayor earlier today and asked how we proceed. And I have a message in to the city manager. And I know it's going to be a process, and I know it's going to take time. But the right steps have to be taken. It has to be done correctly. So all in good time.
So what do you want to see on the plaza in 5 years, if anything?
5 years is an interesting one. I'd like to see it left open for a while, or maybe a labyrinth laid in to the ground. So that a lot of people like to do like prayer labyrinths or meditation labyrinths. I think that would be nice, still be an open space. But I've seen some incredibly beautiful kinetic sculptures on YouTube, just massive things that do amazing things that you didn't think metal could do. So I'm interested in that. There's a lot of good ideas out there, really.
Owen, do you have any thoughts?
I did, actually. I lived for some years abroad and in Italy, which actually has about 30% of all UNESCO heritage monuments in the entire world, interestingly enough. So I've seen many. And one thing that I noticed is streets are renamed and monuments are periodically taken down. But in Italy and in many countries in Europe, there is a preservation of what was there before. So if a street is renamed, the original name would be listed underneath it. If a monument is taken away, often a plaque will be put in simply to record what was there. And while we may not agree on interpretations of the past and of history, and again, I don't think we need to talk about McKinley and who he was. I think that debate is closed. I think maybe simply something in the area noting the fact that for over 100 years, a statue of McKinley stood there without entering into controversy could be an option.
Yeah. Okay. It's been suggested that maybe all the things in the plaza, the fixtures, should kind of be portable so we could kind of refashion it at will.
Yeah, I mean, I think when talking about the plaza as a whole and recognizing that a lot of the issues that we face on the plaza are things that other communities have faced as well, you know, I think there's a lot of creative ways that we can utilize the space. And like you mentioned, you know, with portable features. So I think that is probably a way for us to explore over the next several years what can be in the center without making some permanent decision, but really to explore, you know, do we want seating? Do we want to, you know, rotate some, you know, kinetic interactive sculptures? I mean, right, like there's things we can do with that space to have it come to life without making a permanent decision. And the other thing I want to say about this open space too is that I think there's also just, you know, a lot of opportunity. We have the farmers markets, we have the community events, and so having that opened up, I think, will help us to explore the potential uses of that space.
I have a question for you. So you had a vote on the plaque, which its destiny had pretty much been sealed, from what I understand. Bill Chino, co-owner of Jacoby Storehouse, had spoken with a sign vendor who said, yeah, we can do it for under your budget. And so did you guys really need to vote on that, or It seemed like a symbolic vote.
No, I mean, well, for me, I didn't know that it was just me that, you know, kind of wanted to separate them. And, you know, that became clear that...
Can I ask about that? The decision to... Because from an historical point of view, from what I've researched, they're unrelated. I could be wrong. So I'm curious as to why it was decided to merge these issues. Because in merging them, what we got was a lot more controversy than either one would have, I feel, had individually.
I think that they were the same issue in the sense that they were offensive to Indigenous people. Mm-hmm.
And not just Indigenous people. I'm not called Indigenous person, but I don't want a big dumb thing misinforming people and using that term Indian Troubles to describe what occurred here.
Yeah.
I should be offensive to everyone.
Right? Is that connected to the statue?
No, but one thing I will say, I mean, aside from the point that Vice Mayor Watson brought up, I do think that is a link of why they were being discussed at the same time. But I think I have to disagree with the point that somehow elevated the controversy around these items separately. I really get the sense that the McKinley statue on its own really bared most of the controversy, and that the plaque was really where most people were feeling like, okay, like when you looking at the public comments, when I look back on the emails and the calls that I got, the letters to the editor, that really wasn't the focal point of the debate.
Okay. So it sounded to me like when I sat through the goal setting sessions, thank you for your stamina, doing those 3-hour meetings every year. You seem to allude to it's going to happen. We're going to have a plaza working group maybe next month formed. And that's going to, the statue was by far not the only problem we have on the plaza, as everybody knows. Is it to address those kinds of problems, the petty crime, the lack of people feeling comfortable out there?
Yeah, if it's all right, let me just kind of give some updates on that. From our goal setting session, we talked a lot about a lot of different issues, but specifically around the plaza, for those of you that are interested. One of the things that we did talk about is, you know, we've received lots of feedback. We've had lots of great ideas over the years of what we can do to improve the plaza and make it so that everyone feels comfortable using it, so parents can have their kids play on the plaza. I think that's something that we all want. Of course, there's many different ways to try and approach that. So we got a lot of public feedback. We've compiled it thanks to some really great interactive study sessions. And we are going to have this spring a working group of the different stakeholders from our city committees, you know, Chamber of Commerce, Arcata Main Street, and really have a breakdown of, you know, what are the things that we can do in the next year or so where we can really focus our resources. And so we are going to be putting money aside in our budget for this next fiscal year to actually have money set aside so that we can invest that money into the project. So it's not just saying, yes, this sounds nice, and maybe someday we'll get it done, but that way we can move it forward. The other piece that we move forward in goal setting was prioritizing the creation of a new position under the Arcata Police Department, a crime prevention officer. And that's a non-sworn position. But really, our sworn officers need to be focused on their sworn duties and recognizing that there's a lot of needs in terms of engaging the business community, our neighborhood watches, our community groups, disaster preparedness. Having a person that can really focus on that and engage the community and work with our business community and our neighborhoods, that role, I think whoever gets that role, there's a lot of pressure on them, knowing that that's not going to totally fix the problems. But we need that person who can be that link and help support our community in addressing issues around the plaza. So that's another really important piece of it, too.
I wonder if we ever really will be able to stop people from abusing the law when there are no cops around. It seems like rain and cops. That's the only thing that works. Stopping dogs from running wild and people smoking, all kinds of things, and yelling. And
you know, I think over the past several years, if you look at how our criminal justice system has evolved, we've had, you know, Prop 47, we had 2011 realignment, which fundamentally changed the way our criminal justice system works and what are misdemeanors and felonies. So you know, our system has changed dramatically over the past 7 years, and not that these weren't issues on the plaza years ago, but I think some people would say that things may have gotten worse. And so I think the ways we've been able to engage people in the past, the tools have changed. And so I think we need to be adapting.
Wasn't there a discussion at the goal setting of having a team of professionals that would go around and find the hardest cases of the most service-resistant group and just envelop them in services? And I mean, because it's a relatively small group of people who are responsible for, by far, the most many citations and infractions.
Yeah, so we've convened a homeless services working group, which has, you know, several different agencies that do serve the homeless population, people that are dealing with substance abuse issues, et cetera. So how can we better be working together? We are working with the county to bring the mobile intervention services team, which is something
that's called,
a model's been really successful in Eureka. So that is something that we will be able to have staffing support to bring to Arcata, because it takes daily engagement to make sure that people are getting connected to resources. And so we have to be ready to engage on a daily basis, because there may be that one day where that person is ready to receive services.
Well, one of the arguments for removing the statue was that it's going to, the statue itself's bad vibes are responsible for a lot of this stuff. We're going to move on to a new era of dignity, respect, and healing. Right, Fire?
Absolutely.
Okay. I mean, I hope that's real. Looking in the Facebook today, there was no evidence of that had gotten underway
I'm
yet.
I'm not sure if we can blame an extremely high murder rate on a statue of a former president.
Okay, well, we've got about 3 minutes left. Are there any points we haven't addressed that anybody would like to bring up with the statue?
I just want to thank the Arcata City Council, who I think day in, day out, year in, year out, has for years just done a tremendous job. I've lived in Arcata for about 20 years, and I'm just really proud of our city council. I'm proud of our police department. I'm proud of the city workers. And there is no other place where I've lived where I've really felt this way. But I love Arcata. And I just want to send out my appreciation and thanks to everybody.
I don't think anybody's going to question your love for Arcata Fire. You've been contributing on so many levels to the town for so long.
Can I just thank Fire very quickly also? You know, I'm really impressed at the fundraising that you're already doing and you're prepared to do. A lot of people that I've spoken to were concerned that a lot of money was going to be spent on a removal when there are many other problems to be dealt with. So, I'd like to say personally that I appreciate not only your involvement, but financially what you're doing for this project and this city. And I would like to say, while I may not have agreed with the decision that the city council came to last night, I would like to thank the mayor and the vice mayor for their dedication, their hard work, their involvement with this city, because I do think we all love it. And I don't think any of us would be here if we didn't. I would also like to say thank you for the opportunity to speak tonight.
Well, of course. You know, our town does have some wonderful institutions. I really think that our police, and it's not, actually, there's a myth that the fire department has something to do with the city. It's its own independent agency. It's not associated with the city of Arcata, other than liaising. But we have a great fire department, too. Mm-hmm. And we have some really vital democratic institutions, including those city volunteer committees and commissions. Those are my favorite thing in the whole wide world. And there are so many. There's Wetlands and Creeks, Open Space, Planning Commission, you know, Historic Landmarks Committee, which will be helping to rephrase the next generation plaque that we're going to have. And a lot of those committees, they need members, and there's a lot of churn, you know, in those. So if you want to be part of this democratic machine we have at City Hall, you should volunteer. You people out there should volunteer for a city committee. It's a lot of fun. You meet a lot of people. Very interesting work, and you're right at the heart of things. You advise the city council, and you really drill into depth on stuff and give these very reasoned analyses to the council so that they can ignore them and do whatever they want. The other thing that we need volunteers for is the Arcata Police Department's Citizen Volunteer Patrol Program. And you can call 826-4805, and they just get to drive around in a 57 Chevy cop car and do vacation house checks and stuff like that. So that's awesome, too. So you should get involved with that. I'd like to thank all of our guests today, Amy Matheson and Aaron Youngblood-Smith of We Are Your Community. Watch for that. Their email is weareyourcommunityarcata@gmail.com. Check them out on Facebook. We Are Your Community, because you are their community too, and we are the world. We are the children. I mean that seriously. Yeah. Mayor Sophia Pereira, thanks.
Thank you for
putting yourself out there and subjecting yourself to all the criticism and the difficult choices and trying to, you know, keep people in line to speak and everybody get their turn. with varied levels of success. Brett Watson, Vice Mayor, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
For being here. Fire Phoenix, thanks, as always, for doing what you do.
Thank you.
Owen Moore, thanks for being an original and speaking truth to power.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for all the listeners and the one person who communicated with us, that nameless lady at the beginning of the show. Thank you. And thanks to Mike, our producer.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Thursday Night Talk on KHSU. Thanks to our host, Kevin Hoover, and to all of our guests this evening. We love to get feedback on our programs. Please email thursdaynighttalk@khsu.org and like our Facebook page, Thursday Night Talk on KHSU. Sharon Fennell hosts next week's Thursday Night Talk. Thanks to KHSU Thursday Night Talk producer Geraldine Goldberg. Our theme music is composed and performed.